This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Charlie Dobbin here, and my comrade in arms is off at the cottage. So I'm flying solo today. Dean has gone off to a family event, and I hope he's having a lovely weekend. It's gorgeous weather across the province, which is always wonderful and exciting and great to be outside. I know after the show what I'm doing. I have several things on my list, which I'll get into in, if you wish me to tell you all my details. But in the meantime, of course, I'd like to hear about you and some of your details. So questions, tips, tricks, techniques, give me a call. I'm here at the following numbers. In for the local callers in the GTA, of course, the number is 416-360-0740. And if you're outside the local calling, anywhere in Ontario, 866-740-4740. Now, we do have a mantra. Remember the mantra. Call early. So call early, otherwise you're going to just listen to me blathering on about this, that, and the other thing. So call early. Call often. You can always call more than once. And preferably only one question per caller. Though sometimes, you know, I have to ask you some questions to clarify sort of what's going on and what the real question is, et cetera, et cetera. So I do have a few emails I can get to eventually. But for those of you that got some rain this week, lucky you, I didn't get any. So things are starting to look a bit crispy at my house. It's been about 10 days since we had any real rain. And of course, I'm out in Prince Edward County, living on a well with clear, you know, limited water. So there's no irrigation system or sprinklers running at my place. I do have rain barrels, and I am hauling buckets of water around because vegetables must be kept consistently moist. We don't let them, you know, get into a real dry situation if we hope to harvest whatever it is we're growing. And I know I've been picking and enjoying beans like crazy. I've got kale coming out of my ears. The eggplants are coming along beautifully, even the carrots. You know, thinning the carrots means bringing some baby carrots out of the soil to enjoy, to allow the other ones to get a little bigger. So yeah, it's a wonderful time of year. Great time to get outside and enjoy, you know, the bounty, the rewards for all that work and all those weeds we pull, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, please share with me what you're doing, and I'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, a couple of important messages from our sponsors.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, I am here. I'm Charlie Dobbin by myself. My cohort, that Robin, he's off with the family doing the cottage thing. So good for him. I hope they're having a lovely weekend. And I'm happy to hear from you. I see that we do have some callers. Trudy is on the line. Good morning, Trudy.
Good morning, Charlie. And I just wanted to say I love listening to your show. I listen to it every Saturday morning.
My question is
about ever-bearing raspberries. Now, in the spring, early spring, I trimmed it all down and just left a couple of stalks of last year's growth. Now it's just growing wild and crazy. Do I have to trim them at all this year? I know they're going to be bearing on the new growth, but the new growth is just so wild and crazy.
Yeah. So the trick with ever-bearing raspberries, which is a little different from the regular, you know, once-bearing raspberries, is that once the canes have fruited, we cut them down to being, you know, 2 inches tall. So depending on what happened last year, So if you had a really good harvest last year, and many of the canes, and you can tell that they have borne fruit. They look very different. They've got, you know, what's left from where the fruits were. Those need to be cut down in the spring is usually when people will do it. And then that way, that encourages, as you're experiencing, lots of new growth. And that new growth is where this year's raspberries will grow. You've been getting raspberries, I assume?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
That's good. And raspberries in general, if they're happy and they're in a, you know, well-drained, good sandy, loamy soil with lots of sun, they do tend to really grow and they do can really take over the yard. So it, can be a little bit challenging. You will have to probably dig some out to make sure you've got ways to get into the patch. Otherwise, it'll take over. It'll own your yard, those raspberries.
Okay.
Be careful with fertilizer. Too much fertilizer is exactly what you don't want. You get too much growth. But I will mention that the Ontario Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Rural Affairs, so the acronym is OMAFRA, has a great fact sheet for home growers of raspberries. So if you have a pen handy and you write this down, so it's OMAFRA fact sheet. So OMAFRA. So just you Google OMAFRA fact sheet number.
Yeah.
237/12. So just, or even just raspberry fact sheet, you know, Ontario, because you always remember when we're doing any research or we're trying to find how to do something in our gardens, try always to find websites that are local to you. You want Ontario websites whenever possible. The way they grow raspberries in South Carolina or California or even British Columbia is not how we grow raspberries in Ontario. It's a different world, different soil, different climate. So
Charlie, can you give me that number again?
Always add Ontario. What's that?
Okay. Can you give me that number again, please, Charlie? It's 237.
Yep. And then /12.
12. Okay. I sure appreciate that.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And good luck with that. I love raspberries, but I rely on my neighbors to grow them so I don't have to have them taking over my place. Thanks for your call.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, we have, Jean is on the line calling from Newmarket, and I think she's going to ask us about some pesky bugs. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning, Charlie. First, I want to tell you a miracle for keeping the mosquitoes off while I'm gardening. Unbelievable. I don't get any cutback for this. I saw it on Dragon's Den, and they sell a dragonfly on a little bit of a wire with a clip, and you clip that on your hat, and they won't land. So try it.
That
You'll
works
like it.
On mosquitoes, yeah?
Yeah, it does.
Wow.
Amazing.
Oh, that's very cool. I've definitely seen them for sale in like the hunter shops outdoorsy sort of shops. Even I've seen in that little clip, I think, in the Lee Valley Tools catalog. So, but I always thought they were more for, black flies and deer flies. But yeah, if they work on mosquitoes, that's great.
Yeah, because we don't have those other two you mentioned, but of course everybody has mosquitoes. Now, we've got a wedding, and we've bought a machine to supposedly clear a whole acre, but that's another story. I'm wondering, please, what do you suggest plants we could buy attract dragonflies? I looked it up on the net, and I've got black-eyed Susan, rutabaga, broadleaf, arrowleaf, cornflowers, asters, but I'm wondering what will be in bloom in September 7th.
Wow. That sounds like fun. Asters, you mentioned, are definitely a late blooming plant. So basically what you're looking for are plants that will be blooming that are preferably native because they will attract the native insect population, the pollinators, right, which are so important that we support them throughout the season. Asters are a great choice. Sedum is a great choice. Black-eyed Susans and
rutabaga. Oh, my God, I can grow sedum. Thank you. Okay.
And black-eyed Susans and rutabaga is the same thing. Rutabaga is the proper name for black-eyed Susans. Many of those, most of those will bloom well into the fall. So for sure, that's a great one. I'm just, oh, I just flat. At that time of year, I wonder, will you be, so you're thinking of, to plant, like you've got some gardens you want to fill with color, basically, and also attract things like dragonflies?
No, I need bloom night to attract the dragonfly.
Yeah, so the other thing is, okay, dragonflies, the ones that fly around, which are the adults, and they look like helicopters, basically. There's damselflies, which are smaller than dragonflies, and dragonflies can be extremely large. And they do eat, no question, lots of mosquitoes. But they eat even more mosquitoes when the dragonflies are babies, because a baby dragonfly is born in the water, just like a baby mosquito is born in the water. So the eggs are laid in the water, the eggs hatch in the water, and what's in the water are these little tiny nymphs, they're called, and they're swimming around until they grow up and grow wings and fly out of the water. They are underwater, and boy, do dragonfly nymphs eat a lot of mosquitoes in the water. So how do you attract dragonflies? See what you can do in terms of, do you have water on your property at all? A river, a stream, a little pond, anything?
No, but I could make one, couldn't I? No.
You could. So to attract, keeping in mind that you'll be attracting mosquitoes as well, right? Mosquitoes will lay their eggs in that same water where the dragonfly will lay its eggs. So there's always that cost-benefit analysis you have to do, but for sure. And yeah, maybe those dragonfly clips will be something that you'll have as party favors for everybody at the party.
Okay, thank you. And you are incredible. You know everything about everything. Thank you, Charlie.
I wish. Thank you for saying that, and thanks for calling. And, you know, I always say I know a lot of stuff, and I do, but I don't know everything. There's a lot of things I don't know. I always think in the back of my mind, there's somebody listening at home to this show on the radio, and they're yelling at the radio going, Charlie, no, not that, no, whatever. Well, you forgot such and such. So anyway, yep, feel free to call in and tell me what I've forgotten. All right, back right after this.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Alrighty. So listen, I'm here all by myself. I need to hear from you. Here are the numbers. Local 416-360-0740 or outside the GTA 866-740-4740. Remember, call early. Call often, one question per caller, and we do have Eva waiting patiently on the line from Burlington. Good morning, Eva.
Good morning, Charlie. I very enjoy your show. I often listen. I'm the first time caller, but I listen in almost every weekend.
Thank you for calling. I just want to tell you, ding, 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 ding. I don't have a bell. So there, you have your garden wings. Don't be a stranger. Keep on calling.
Thank you. No, I didn't have much to call about. But I'm always interested to hear, about different things. I like garden. I like to gardening. Do the gardening. And I'm always interested on helpful tips.
Oh, good.
My question is, first time I've ever had the tomatoes that I haven't seen any flowers on, and the plants are very tall now, and they hardly have any flowers, and I don't know why.
Okay, so are they in the ground or pots?
Are they in the ground? Yes. And they have nice and sunny location, and I don't know what would cause them not to bloom.
Okay. Well, the main thing that will cause anything to not bloom is too much nitrogen fertilizer. Have you been fertilizing the tomatoes?
I haven't been fertilizing much, and where I planted them, that's the first time I ever planted them in that location. Mm-hmm. too. So okay. I don't know.
That's good. We never want to keep planting the same plants in the same spot, particularly when it comes to tomatoes. So here's what I would do. No more, do not fertilize at all. Uh-huh. If you're getting a lot of green growth, do you have any idea what kind of tomatoes they are?
They're really, really green, and very healthy looking plants.
Yeah, that's what tells me they've got too much nitrogen. That's what nitrogen does. Like when you look at a fertilizer bottle or container, there's three numbers that are sort of the main, what we call macronutrients in the fertilizer. So those three numbers are listed with little dashes in between, and the first number represents the nitrogen. So when we're fertilizing our lawns, for example, and we want lots of green growth, then the fertilizer will typically have a big high number at the beginning of those three numbers. So 2177 was a classic lawn fertilizer. So three times as much nitrogen as the phosphorus and the potassium. So for tomatoes, of course, we want the opposite. We want more both phosphorus and potassium than we want nitrogen. So there are special tomato fertilizers out there. But for your purposes, I would do some pruning away of some of that green growth, because the plant gets so shaded and dense with leaves that you won't get flowers. Or if you do get flowers, you won't be able to find the fruit because it'll be just, a forest of leaves. So remember, have you staked the tomatoes to grow tall, or are they sprawling on the ground?
I did stake them, and I also, clipping all the wild, branches, whatever they grow from, what you call the suckers or whatever they call.
Okay, good. Yeah, exactly. They are called suckers. The new little tips that come out from between the main stem and a leaf, you get little what's called an axillary growth. So it's in the axle between the main stem and the leaf. And just with your thumb, when they're young, you just pop those out, and it keeps the plant taller. You'll have fewer fruits, but it'll also keep it under sort of less dense in terms of the growth. So, yeah, I think the main thing is maybe you've added some manure along the way, or you've got really good soil there that's just chock full of nitrogen. So you've got healthy, happy plants. But for now, to encourage flowers, like I say, lots of sun, lots of good air circulation, and no fertilizer unless you can come up with, sometimes people will use a bit of bone meal because that's phosphorus, and they'll scatter that around the tomatoes, or crush up some eggshells and scatter those around the tomatoes. But otherwise, I wouldn't do a lot of fertilizing. And it's still only July, so don't worry. You've still got lots of time for flowers and tomatoes to form.
Okay, thank you. I'll try that.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Enjoy your day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You too. You too. Thanks for calling. Don't be a stranger. We used to always say, the coffee's always on. So just, call in anytime. Okay. I will remind you of the numbers. I do have a few callers on the line, but remember 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740. Call early, call often. One question per caller. And yes, I have some emails I can share with you as well. But in the meantime, we have Helen on the line calling from Etobicoke, and she's going to ask about my favorite plant. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Excellent.
Good. I think I spoke to you before, and I think I might have sent you a picture of my wisteria, which was absolutely fabulous and bloomed like crazy this spring. And now when I go and see it, I see these, long green fuzzy pods, and they're almost like a pea, pod, but they're green and they're fuzzy, and why are they there?
Those are the fruits. Those are the seeds that have formed from where the flowers were.
Oh, are they? Is that what that is?
Yeah. Makes sense, right? When you think about it, this was a great year for wisteria. It's funny, it's actually makes sense. After a mild winter and a few harsh winters, the wisteria, anybody who had wisteria or was growing it, typically had flowers this year. It was a really beautiful year for the wisteria.
Yes,
and it's a very, very popular plant as well. So what are you going to do with those pods? Well, like there's a good question. What are you going to do with those pods? You want to grow more wisteria?
Well, no, actually, they're just hanging off the branch now, which is quite, the tree is quite tall, or the vine or whatever you say, and it's standing by itself now. It's not attached to a wall or anything else because it's knocked down the fence that it had initially.
Yes.
But I think it's hanging off the branches, these pods, and so I just leave them, do I, and then just wait until next spring and hope that I see more wisteria flowers.
Yeah, well, remember, okay, two things. Eventually, you're going to have to give that wisteria something to grow on. Otherwise, it's just going to fall over and crawl all over the ground, right?
Oh, it's pretty
right?
strong,
it is
though,
a vine. It is a vine. I mean, even if you don't give it a fence or an arbor, you need to support the main stem. And actually, you know, it can't. People sometimes will grow wisteria. It almost looks like a tree. So the vine, the main stem of the vine over time gets thicker and thicker and looks more like a tree, a stem of a tree or a trunk of a tree.
Yes,
and of course, then all the growth is up on top of that. And so you can do that. But you know what? You are really going to have to get out there and do some serious pruning. All that new, those big, long green shoots that are shooting off that plant need to be cut back.
Will I do that now?
Yeah, you're going to do that 3 times a year. You're going to do that with wisteria. Oh. Lots of pruning.
Oh, good. Oh, my gosh. Well, I haven't been doing that, but thank you for that. I'll do it.
Yes.
And if you take a minute,
even if you just Google growing wisteria in Ontario, there's some really good YouTube videos. Just to give you a sense of, you know, confidence of what you're cutting back. But you can be pretty brutal to wisteria when it is growing like crazy. And if you aren't brutal, you're going to regret it because that plant will just take over the neighborhood. I mean, it's a lovely plant, but it does need to, like, you're the master, right? Don't let that plant think it's the boss. You are.
Okay.
And with seed pods, you know what? I think I can look at this up a bit more, but for now, leave the pods on the plant. They are interesting to look at, and they do have to mature. And then, of course, the question is, will you collect those pods or just let them drop to the ground, which is what they will do. And I don't know if you want more wisteria, but you might have neighbors that want to try and grow wisteria from seeds. They are very slow to grow from seed and get flowers. It will take a number of years. So that's a consideration if there's somebody out there who's thinking about maybe growing wisteria from seed. But I can certainly report back a little more about what to do Helen, if you want to keep those seeds for yourself.
Oh, good point. Well, I think about that then. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for calling.
And you're most helpful. Thank you again.
Yeah, and congratulations on having a beautiful flowering wisteria this spring. Because, you know, hello, it's just so nice.
It is.
All right. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
All right, we've got a couple more people to chit-chat with. I can see Dorothy has given us a call in from Markham. Good morning, Dorothy.
Good morning. I hope you can help me. I have problems with a chipmunk.
Mm-hmm.
They're making holes around the foundation of the house. And I block the little holes, but then the smart buggers, they goes and they dig all the earth out again all over around the air condition. They're making one hell of a mess. But it's only one I can notice, like only one. You know, that comes with the cheeks full of seeds, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah.
So what is it I can do?
Yeah. Okay. To help you, I mean, ultimately, there are humane traps. You can trap that chipmunk and then drive it away somewhere else, kilometers away, and hope it doesn't come back and hope there's not a family left behind. I find that chipmunks this year have been particularly, gregarious. Yes, digging holes, moving things all over the place, making a real mess of the garden. Now, I'm okay with, see, I have bird feed. Do you have bird feeders by any chance, Dorothy?
Oh, by the chance. They brought a bundle and planted it in the pot, and they think they're sunflower seeds. So I figure that was sunflower seeds he had in his cheeks, you know.
Yes.
And they were growing.
Yes.
But it's the ground sill around the air condition and the ground sill of the house. I plug the hole, and I figure it's him. But I see it goes through the fence, and I follow him. I blocked it, but he makes another one.
Right.
So
yep, they're pretty energetic little diggers.
Yeah,
so
they're very fast.
Ultimately.
So what can I do for them?
Well, cats and dogs can be great at catching or at least frightening chipmunks away from the property. So if you have a pet or you want to get a pet, this might be a good reason to do so.
No,
otherwise, it's trapping or hiring a pest control company to trap for you. You don't want to put out any poisons or anything like that because there will be neighborhood animals or other wild animals you do not want to hurt. But yeah, no, the chipmunks, I hear you. I mean, they can undercut your, if they keep digging under your air conditioner, it's going to start, no longer be level, and then it's not going to work properly. So it's going to end up costing you thousands of dollars to allow the chipmunks to have their way.
But years ago, we had the moles in the front lawn. Mm-hmm. I used to see the grass, the tunnels underneath the grass. But I haven't seen that now for a few years. I don't know what become of them. But the moles that go through the grass. Mm-hmm. But now this year is a chipmunk.
Yeah, exactly. Well, isn't that the way it works, right? One thing goes up and another thing goes down. The more coyotes and foxes that are in the urban and suburban world, the fewer moles and rabbits we have.
I was wondering if lights at night burning there, mean throughout the day, or blinking those things in the yard, if that discouraged them or what, to frighten them away.
There are these like sort of ultrasonic devices that you can use and supposedly will keep mice, like the animals can hear the sounds, but we can't, that supposedly can be effective, but I don't know how effective. Because remember, when they're underground, they're completely safe. And that's why they're digging all those tunnels, and the tunnels are all connected. So even every time you fill in one hole, they'll just come up another spot or redig where you dug. And they have a lot of energy, those chipmunks. They're quiet at night, as far as I know, but they're out all day.
If I see the hole in the morning time and I put water in there, you think they will run away from the water?
Yeah, but not for long, because the water will just dissipate into the soil.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, I think at the end of the day, and chipmunks are a pretty huge problem when you get outside into the rural environment. People, they really cause a lot of damage to buildings, like you're saying, the digging undermining foundations. So, consider maybe calling a local pest control company and just see what they would charge to get your property chipmunk free, even just to get through this season, and then see what happens next year. Because, I hear your problem. Or invite a friend over with a dog and get that dog after the chipmunk, because it's nothing. There's no easy solution to this problem.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you for calling.
You.
And I hear your pain. I really do. It's not pleasant. Not pleasant at all, having the little beasties running around the garden like that. Okay. On that note, I'm going to take a break for a couple of minutes here, and please feel free. We've still got a good 20 minutes left in the show. 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740. Back right after this.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, here we are. I just, in that brief break, looked up quickly wisteria seeds. So Helen, if you're still listening from Etobicoke, yes, indeed. Wisteria can be grown from seeds, but it can take up to 15 or 20 years to get a plant that will flower. One of the recommendations, and it does make sense, is to remove the seed pods from your wisteria in order to keep it blooming in the future. If you leave those pods there, they will mature. Once they do mature, they tend to blow their seeds up to a meter away when they ripen. So it's interesting how plants have evolved for dispersal of seeds. So in this case, wisteria literally explode. The pods will explode. The seeds will poof out around the plant, and you may end up with a wisteria farm, and you may totally regret that. So maybe cut those pods off, forget about giving them to anybody else. Just cut them off, remove them, compost them if you wish, but don't let them mature. And that will help encourage more flower, the formation of flower buds for next year. That's kind of the point. You want it to, your plant to flower. You don't want to start a farm, I would think. All right. Let's see what's going on in Newmarket. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning. Thanks to your guidance. Again, I'm following the rules.
I know.
Have
good
a,
for you.
Yeah, right. Hoya, you told me how to do, and it is flourishing, and sweet. I don't know what to do with it now. It's starting that it'll need something for support. It was really tiny when I got it. And I have it on a plant stand with several other plants, and I got the brainwave that I would let it weave through the plant stand. But how would I water it? So that's not a good idea.
You know, it almost needs its own hanging basket or its own plant stand. Or sometimes, like I've seen, if it's a bright room, nice, good sunshine coming in on the top of a bookcase or etagere, to just have the plant sitting up on the top shelf and let it just grow across the top of that piece of furniture and let it trail down the sides. But either way, yeah, it should be, they have small roots. You want them to be tight in the pot. Only if you have a lot of roots growing over the bottom of the pot do we put them into a bigger pot. Because once they're happy and growing and thriving, they do tend to really, really get going. So I wouldn't rush it into a bigger pot until you need to, but do allow it to expand and do what it wants to do. Like, it wants to send out long trailers.
But how do I water it if it becomes on the bookcase or something? Yeah.
You'd have, yeah. It has to be something that you can access. So, you know, whether it's, if you need a ladder to water it, you probably will regret that. Though we don't water Hoya very often. You know, maybe once every 2 weeks or so in the summer and once every month or so in the winter. Like, it's not a plant that requires a lot of water.
But I like taking them and putting them in the sink and then letting the water soak right through. And what if I can't do that if it's kind of attached somewhere?
That's right. Oh, I agree. Yeah. Yeah. No, but still, it could sit up on if it's not too tall a bookcase, it could just sit up and not be twined anywhere. Just have the long runners run across the bookcase or the plant stand, as the case may be. Oh. But yeah, don't, if you do want to get it into the sink, you're not going to have it attached to anything. Though sometimes people will use a small trellis in the pot, stakes in the pot, and train the plant on a wire frame or the trellis or the stakes. You know, at Christmas time, we can buy ivy that's been trained into a wreath shape or, you know, different ways to twine vines into a shape, but it's all still portable. It's not attached to any furniture. It's all in the same pot. You could consider something like that as well. I'm sure you could find some interesting little trellises at your local garden center to give you that option.
Thank you. You answered my final question. Thanks, Charlie. Take care.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Thanks for calling, Jean, and thanks for following the rules. You're a good listener. You call anytime.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye. Bye for now. And okay, we've got calling from Burlington. I was going to say, oh, Barbie's giving us a call. Good morning, Barbie.
Good morning, Charlie.
How's
I have
things
a
in
question.
Burlington.
Yes, lovely in Burlington. We've
good.
Had lots of rain, so lots of good weeds growing.
I know. Hear you.
However, the one thing that it didn't grow was my Japanese maple. It was not the variety that was a tree. It was that cut leaf one, and very susceptible to high heat. But last year, I've had it maybe 7-8 years, and last year I saw some keys, maple keys on it, and I kept them, and I'm just wondering at what time of the year would it be best to try, can I start them inside or do I start them outside? That's my question.
Okay. Yeah. So is this, so is the form of the plant, is it a weeping form or is it upright?
No, sort of a weeping one.
Okay.
It was about three feet tall, and it sort of hung down a bit.
Right.
And then it had one leaf or one branch sort of grew up straight, and then we cut that off. But that was the year before, and it was growing fine. And this year it just, I thought it was having buds starting, and then nothing happened. I haven't removed it out of the ground yet because I'm in shock that it's dead.
Right. That's a good point, Barbie. When anybody who's listening, when we have a situation like that where spring arrives, plants are waking up, but one plant isn't waking up, a plant we expect to burst forth into buds and leaves doesn't, then this is usually back in March or April or May, depending on the spring, then what we have to do, what I do is I get out my pruners and I prune the tips of plants that are not waking up. And that will often force them to wake up. It's a hormonal thing happens when we remove the tips and suddenly the buds will break. And it's probably too late now. You can scratch the bark a tiny bit. If it's slippery end of the bark, then the plant is still alive. It's still worth trying, even though it's the end of July. From seed, you will not get the same plant that the seeds came from. The Japanese maple grew would have been a cultivar, and cultivars produce seeds, but the seeds do not necessarily look like the parent. And however, if you want to try growing Japanese maples from seeds, do what Mother Nature would do. The seeds you collected last year would have ripened last fall, would have dropped to the ground, and would have grown or not. If you've brought them inside, I just quickly answer my question. Did you bring the seeds in last fall into your house, or are they still outside in nature?
No, I brought them in the house and put them in a paper envelope.
Okay. So now you have to go back to being Mother Nature. Those seeds need winter in order to grow in the spring. So you get yourself a plastic bag, some fresh sterile potting mix, you moisten it, you take those seeds, you put the seeds into the moist soil that's in, or potting mix that's in the plastic bag, put a date on it, stick it in the fridge and into the crisper, and just leave them. They're going to have to sit there for a number of months, maybe right through till about January, February. And at that point, then we can talk about pulling them out of the fridge and potting them up into little pots inside your home to get some little plants growing to go outside next spring. But slow process and slow growth. So if you want to replace that Japanese maple, I wouldn't wait to do it with a seedling. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Barbie. Thanks. I have to let you go. We're funny how we are, of course, have a few people on the line still. So thanks for calling, and be right back after this important message.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hello, hello. Here we are, running down just the last few minutes of the show. And look, another caller from Burlington. It's a great gardens in Burlington. Good morning, Shirley.
Good morning, Charlie. I wanted to ask you about a hydrangea I've got in a small bed. It's a lovely flowering bush, and I would like to split it. When do I do that?
Okay, so shrubs like hydrangea are not usually split the way we split perennials.
Okay.
Instead, if you want to grow more of that plant, which you can do quite easily, actually, you will take cuttings from it and you will root, like little tip cuttings, you'll root the cuttings and start new plants that way.
Okay. Now, it's too big in the bed that it's in, so can I just cut some of it off?
Yeah. See, the thing is that now wouldn't be my first choice of timing because it probably is covered in flowers. And of course, you're not going to ever get roots from a cutting with flowers on it. What I would do, if you can, if you're not in too much of a rush, is I'd wait till next year when the shrub starts to grow, the green leaves start to grow, and all that new green soft growth, you know, basically May, maybe early June, is popping out all over the plant. Then you would take roughly 4-inch cuttings, 4, 5, 6-inch cuttings off the tips of however many of the branches you want. You would remove the lower leaves so that where the leaves come out, the little bumps on the stems are where the roots are going to come out. And you can just use a jar of water and pop those. The leaves are removed from the bottom of the cuttings. Those cuttings are put into the jar of water. Leave the whole thing outside. I wouldn't bring them inside necessarily, though you can if you want. And roots will form. It'll take about a week, 10 days. You'll have some roots. And then you plant those little puppies wherever you want, either start in pots or go directly into the garden. And before you know it, you've got yourself, you know, a whole hydrangea nursery going on.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
yeah, it's perfectly legal. It's illegal to propagate plants to sell them unless you have a patent to do so. But it's perfectly legal to propagate plants for your own use. The plant police will not arrest you for growing any kinds of particularly hydrangeas because they're so pretty and there's so many beautiful ones out there and they're very easy to propagate. When I moved here to where I now live in Prince Edward County, I brought with me cuttings from a number of my shrubs. Rather than trying to move the shrubs, I took cuttings from the shrubs and now have full-size shrubs. It doesn't take long. They're pretty fast growing.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling. Don't be a stranger. And welcome as a first-time caller. I neglect to have my chimes. I need Robin here, or also known as Dean, with the chime machine. So, you know, ding, 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 and welcome, and don't be a stranger.
Okay, thank
you. Garden wings. We love those. It helps us to really do a good macro view. You know, it's like those drone people cheating on the New Zealand soccer. Well, we have, you know, garden wings, not to cheat necessarily, but just to get a bigger macro view of our gardens and other people's gardens. And of course, we don't call it cheating. We call it borrowing. And when we like what somebody's done, combinations or layout of certain things, you know, there's really nothing new in gardening. It's just a matter of working with your circumstances, working, you know, plants that work at your house. For example, I'm having great success with echinacea, which is a perennial, comes in so many pretty colors. And I'm having, like I say, good success, my lots of sun, my soil. So this year I've added in, gosh, another 8 or 10 echinacea. I've got white, orange, pink. I've got like almost every color of the rainbow going on with the echinacea. So work with what works in your garden, I guess, is the bottom line to my message there. Because you know what? Why struggle? Sometimes it's just not worth the struggle. After the show, which is will be done in less than a minute now, I'm going out to check my garlic. So if you're growing garlic, we're at that point where we got to dig up one, see what it looks like. It might be time to dig them all up at this point, depending on how much yellow growth you have on your garlic leaves. So garlic harvest today, water as necessary, keep those weeds under control. And thanks for all your great calls. Thanks, Ashy. She's been quietly in the background running the show. So thanks a bunch, and we'll see you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.